So let's talk about the experiments and what do you have in mind?
I still don't know, because what I was thinking is which would be the scenario on which this solution could provide some benefits.
Hmm.
And that would be a scenario where you have different hosts hosting different VMs, which the way that all the VMs were placed on the hosts ended being that some hosts had more storage requirements or at least workloads that would benefit more from a higher capacity of cache than other hosts. But then I was thinking that one approach to solve that is just to migrate the machines or to place it in a different in a different way. Because typically you will have several VMs in a host. So you can play around moving this to this other and moving from the other host that has less cache requirements from the host that has more or less cache requirements and swap them out so it establishes. In that sense, we solve the issue without having to book the VM or to migrate them.
Yes.
But in terms of how to evaluate it without taking into account the benefit of avoiding the migration, I don't see a clear way. Because every person could argue that, okay, you can solve that just by moving things around.
Right, I think what Ricardo was suggesting the other day was to create a scenario where migration cannot be done easily. Where you have free cache space in some other host, but that host is completely oversubscribed with CPU or memory or some other resource. Right, then it's not a straightforward migration. Then you have to migrate some other VM from that host so that you free up enough CPU so that whatever you're migrating to the host can be used.
Exactly. I was thinking that that can be solved by swapping VMs between the hosts. Take one that is...
Possibly, but you may have to make many migrations to achieve the same effect. Right? That eventually what you want to do is to use up the portion of the cache by having the workloads that can use that portion of the cache. And it could be not just one, it could be multiple workloads. And the cache requirements can change. And then here's the other point. The cache requirements can change quickly, right? The migrations take a certain amount of time to take effect. And then the other side effect is that the caches are not warmed up and it takes a while to warm up. There is this paper called Bonfire that appeared in This Fast about how to quickly warm caches. And they're saying that it can take half a day or a full day to warm up a cache if you don't do something explicitly, right? So cache warm-up takes time, migration needs resources, and cache requirements change at a finer granularity than migration can react to.
Okay.
So all of these reasons...
All of that
can
should be
in the paper.
In the paper, in the motivation section or something.
So, certainly I do want to do a revision of the motivation where we should talk about all of this stuff.
Okay, in that sense...
What is the simplest experiment that we can do to illustrate the benefits of having global cache versus a local cache solution?
Well, very simplistic, but I don't know if that should be enough. If to assume that we have two hosts and each host only one VM.
Okay.
So in one host we have a VM that has higher cache requirements. And in the other host we have a VM that takes a lot of CPU but small cache requirements. So we can argue that it's in a way to compact them in the same host. And we can have the normal scenario where each of them just use their portion of the cache. We have a small a fixed size cache. And we let the CPU intensive use the whole cache that is assigned to it, but it shouldn't make such a difference. And then in the other one, we just try to use the unified, yes, twice amount of cache.
I think that's a very good, simple experiment to do. The only question is, what is the workload now?
And how to partition it, and the other thing is, should we account for the network cost of accessing the second, the additional part, and how to do that?
Right. So the first thing is, in terms of workload, we would probably need to have one storage intensive workload and one CPU intensive workload, right? I think if we use one of the spec CPU benchmarks and one of the, maybe a postmark with a really large working set, I think we can get those two workloads. I mean, there's some just thinking aloud, right? So though if we define workloads, that's one step. The next step is to what experiment do we want to run? Do we want to simulate, right? What can we do here? One possibility. So the postmark and this whatever benchmark we use will have like very stable behavior, right? Unless there are some phases in the workload, so there's no real phase change. That may be okay.
Once I put it in the flood, I always look for everything in the flood.
Ideally, if we get something like a sequence of MRCs, right, and even if we have storage traces, for different, let's say, you know, we have sequence of MRCs every 5 minutes, and we have a long storage trace of 30 minutes, then and I guess we could run some calculations to do the repartitioning, but I'm not sure if that's easy to do. I know Ricardo was doing similar experiments with the cache partitioning work, where he was computing MRCs every 5 minutes, but I don't know if that's easy to replicate at this point.
Yes.
I don't think it will be.
Unless we can reuse it.
Unless we can reuse it, except that he did this all for ESX, for the ESX hypervisor.
Why is that a problem?
I don't know if the version of the hypervisor that he was using is publicly available. Open source to the university. If we want to make any changes there, we may not be able to make any. I wish Ricardo were a little bit more available. Okay, let's say that's not possible. Then we have these two benchmarks. What can we do with them? What can we report? Maybe report cache hit ratio. So let's say we have IO traces for Postmark and the spec CPU, right? We can collect that. And then,
I remember that in the partitioning paper, there was a way to obtain a latency cure from the MRC cure.
Mm-hmm.
If we could obtain the MRC for each of them, and from that one get the latencies for each of the workloads, and after certain size, just shift the latencies up some fixed movement that will account for the network latency. And then apply partition of the global size for both of them.
I guess the question is where, before you know where the partition is, how do you know where to bump up the latency curve? Isn't that a chicken and egg issue there? Like, how do you bump up the latency curve? Where do you bump it up before you partition?
Oh, of course.
It could be done, possibly. That what you have is a simulated annealing process where you're picking partitions for optimality, but the curves keep changing, right? Based on the partition you pick. The question is, will it converge? And that's something we need to think about. It might be possible. Actually, this is an interesting, good idea.
Because what we can do is simulated annealing is just allocating in steps, space. Once one disk fills up, then all the curves for that host will bump for the next step of simulated annealing.
Yeah.
It's just like giving priority to the hosted workloads to use the hosts.
Certainly we should think more about this. I think this has promise. We would need to work out the details a little bit more. So, you know, continue thinking about this. I don't think we'll be able to push it for this paper.
But following that approach, if we can explain it for this paper, having this simplistic evaluation where you only have one VM in each host, and we really know that one of the VMs have more cache requirements, we know that the bomb will be once it fills up the whole cache.
That would be an easier, I agree, that's an easier. And then what we are looking for is the goal would have to be latency related. What we are optimizing for is maybe minimizing the average latency
of operations
of these two workloads.
For storage operations, right?
Minimizing the average latency of storage operations. The goal of minimizing
isn't that the goal for every cache? Every cache, just minimize latencies.
Minimize latencies. I guess so. Yes, that would be correct. The question is about fairness versus throughput, right? Sometimes you also want to be fair, you want to sometimes have prioritization, and those are the things that makes the issue a little bit more complicated than what you're saying. But in general, I mean, if you don't have any of those issues, then minimizing storage latency is a sound goal. And we could go with that, for this paper at least.
For the particular paper, each portal has at least one minimum size partition, or not even?
Not necessarily. There may be a partition of size 0 for a workload, right? That may be the most optimal thing to do.
So those workloads won't have any caching.
Yeah, because maybe they don't really need anything besides their DRAM. They don't. Yeah, it's possible that they don't need an SSD cache.
Oh, of course, because all of this is below the buffer cache,
yeah.
The cache cache.
You okay? So, did you get a chance to look at the abstract
yes.
that I wrote?
Yes.
Is it?
It's a really good introduction of the whole thing. The only thing is that it doesn't say anything yet about the migration.
Yeah, the migration was the only thing that I didn't have, and I was thinking about adding it or not, and I wasn't sure. So far I have not added it. I think it is important. I'm not sure if it goes to the abstract though yet. And in fact, after I wrote the abstract, I felt like the level of discussion is more like a level of discussion for the introduction than the abstract. An abstract.
Yeah.
And if that is true, then yes, migration should go into the introduction, right? And if I move everything or most of the stuff that I wrote for the abstract to the introduction, then I would also be adding the migration related discussion. And maybe that's why I was a little not sure about adding migration there, because
I wanted to add it to the introduction because I think it's a contribution, and you said that the introduction should have the contribution and the goals.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that I didn't finish it. Pretty much the migration was the last thing that it occurs to me when I was finishing the paper. I had the last section, and then when I was reordering the sections, you said it was not good enough for a section. Then I was thinking on what was it? And it's just a consequence of what we're doing. It's not that we're working for it.
Yeah.
So that's why I move it back to the beginning and I put it as a motivation point.
Yeah, yeah.
Without even talking about it in the rest of the paper.
Yeah, I think that's...
But I think it should be there. And maybe in the contributions part of the introduction.
Yeah. Yeah. So about the going back to the experiments... What can we do? I mean, what do you want to show? We can show the storage latency minimization or storage latency effect on storage latency. But how do we show it? Right? What do we do to show it? And how?
This latency curves, what is plotting is the average latency, right? For
mm-hmm.
all the operations
yeah.
of the world, depending
on
the size of the cache.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to bump it up because that's not what we want.
It is. It would be. Now, so the question is, where do we get latency curves from? If we can just get latency curves without having to run experiments, then we could just use those latency curves to plot average latency for some workloads. Even if we have MRCs, we could probably can use the MRCs and the model for converting to latency curve and do some charts for storage latency.
Once we have the charts, we can have charts the same curve.
Yeah, so converting MRC to So let's say that we have a set of MRCs. We could have various combinations or mappings of these workloads to hosts, right? And assign specific cache sizes, right? And we don't even need to run experiments. If we already have MRCs, we can, talk about, expected storage latency. When you have large versus small caches and of different partitions.
So what you're saying is that we define two hosts with certain CPU capacity, memory capacity, and
yeah.
storage capacity, and then we throw a bunch of workloads, and we get the optimal placement,
yeah.
following a bin packing approach or whatever to place them
mm-hmm.
following the constraints of CPU and memory. And with that optimal approach, we calculate what will be the expected latency for all the workloads. And then we change, that will be the basis scenario. We change the, we introduce the ability of accessing remote cache, and then we can play with the latency
yeah.
curves. So we get a better
yeah, in
placement.
Fact, I was suggesting skipping the first step altogether, that where you do all the allocation of CPU and memory based on workload requirements. We don't even need to do that.
Well,
because if we just have MRCs, and I think that we can get a bunch of MRCs
so
from Ricardo.
I was saying to do that by text, not
oh,
doing
okay.
physical. Because if we don't explain why those workloads are associated with those specific hosts,
mm-hmm.
then someone will argue that, okay, you can migrate and swap them and have a better placement.
Yeah. Except that I don't know if you have CPU utilization for the workloads that Ricardo has MRCs for. What we could do
well,
is construct our own MRCs. Is that what you're thinking about?
No, no, not CPU utilization. I was thinking of having the same MRCs.
Yeah.
And we have each MRC is associated with a workload. Let's say a CPU bench workload.
Yeah.
And we're saying that that benchmark requires, it has its own, it's a VM that has, that requires one core at certain speed has this benchmark.
But where do we get that number from?
The speed?
Yeah.
It could be a...
So it's like a fictional number.
Yeah, it's... Well, that's how real workloads are, right? You create a VM, you put certain amount of CPU, and then you let it run. And
okay.
you sort of fix it in the... But it's pretty much an administrator, right? Who
yeah.
sets those numbers?
Yeah, the administrator sets the numbers. That's true.
So it's something like this administrator created this VM that has this workload, set it with this number.
Okay. Okay. And then we do the bin packing and then using the local MRC partitioning, we find that we estimate storage latency. Then we do the global MRC partitioning, we estimate the storage latency.
Mm-hmm.
And with the global MRC partitioning, we need to, the bumping up is going to be difficult if you have more than one workload per
More
host.
Than one workload per host, yes.
Okay.
But not really, because if we're already doing the...
We need to get Ricardo's help on how to... You know, his whatever solver he's using for partitioning multiple workloads.
Yeah, it's not easy if you don't know.
Yeah, one thing which we could do is we can. What could we do? Let's say we take the following approach, okay, that I think the solver will not work if the latency curves are not monotonic, and what we are saying is that we're going to...
Oh, yes, monotonic.
Yeah.
Isn't that what a simulated annealing tries to do? Even that it's not monotonic, it solves the problem?
Yeah, I mean, simulated annealing addresses the problem of when
I don't really know
the
what.
Summation of all the curves is not monotonic, but individual curves still are monotonic. And here, we are talking about making individual curves non-monotonic. Right? Because we bump latency up for individual curves, they become non-monotonic.
Why? Still monotonically increase.
So latency would decrease as you increase the cache size, right?
Oh, of course.
Okay, latency should still decrease. Actually, it should still decrease even if you... Okay, so if we do the following, let's say you have, you know, two, there are three different steps here. First is the local partitioning.
Let me just write this. Latency should be something like.
Yeah. But that doesn't make any sense, actually.
Yes, this is because the size here, this cache is not at the same speed as this.
Yeah, but even so, it shouldn't be like that. I think it should still be.
Because you cannot increase more of this size. Right?
Yeah, so what you would have is something that is more like this. Flat, maybe a little lower slope, and then like this. Maybe. Actually, this, only the slopes will change, I think. It'll still be monotonic. Right, because what we are saying is, okay, if I have cache, my storage latency goes down. If I don't have cache, my storage latency is like this. Right?
Okay.
Because this is the point of no cache.
Oh, okay.
So then my storage latency is constant.
So what we're doing is the slope of the curve we're multiplying by a factor.
Yeah, we need to, this is where you're, we need to think more, because let's say that, you know, this is there, now the cache size is not uniform.
Okay.
Right? As there's local cache and then there is remote cache. You know what we need to do? We need to have two MRCs, two latency curves. One for local cache, and this is local, and then another when you're using a remote cache. So it's going to be something like this.
I'm not sure whether, because from which point are you starting here? From here?
No. All remote. The entire cache is remote.
Okay.
So I don't know how to combine these two now. Combine these guys.
The problem with the remote, that remote is like a second level cache. You have already hits here.
Mm. Yeah, right. But I'm talking about only remote cache,
okay.
Not cache size. Right. So if I have this curve, I don't know how I'm going to use it, but this is another curve that I could build. There is no local cache at all. There's only remote cache, right?
That easily it should be the same, but this one could be just bumped up by a certain latency factor. Those two should be the same if the cache, the only thing that changes is the latency of the access to the cache.
Right. That is true. Except that when you combine these two, it's what I don't see is you know, how can your latency go
no,
when your cache size is increasing, right?
Yeah,
so that bump doesn't make much sense, actually.
Yeah, I think you're right that this should be the beginning.
Yeah. But the question is, how do we?
I think normally it will be like that, and with the other one will be. Maybe flatter with this one, should go down. Right? I mean, following the same line, sorry. Here both should be the same, but at some point it should be like this, while the other one should.
Question is, how do we calculate this from this and this?
The thing is, how these lines are calculated using the MRC? You just multiply how percentage was the rate of heat.
Yeah. So,
per the latency of cache.
So, yeah. So, miss.
I think that's the easy way.
1
to
minus
do.
Miss rate times latency of cache plus miss rate times the latency of it. That's the latency. The miss rate you get from, you know.
Exactly.
That?
So I think that it's an easy way. You go to the max size, the local size, right? And you calculate the emit rate local size. So it should be.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can.
One minus miss rate local times latency of cache. So this is a miss rate local is the is where you have the local end the size of the local partition plus one minus miss rate MR. What is that?
This is a miss rate that you are experiencing the point that you're trying to calculate.
Oh, that's a miss rate, right? So
yeah, miss rate. Sorry.
Miss rate.
So pretty much it's, let me just write this. I'm removing the part of the miss rate that is already.
Already part of that.
So it should, these things should be like 0.5, 0.2, 0.3.
Yeah.
They all sum 1.
Yeah.
And each of them has different latencies.
Miss rate is 0.7, right?
Yes, something like that.
0.7. Miss rate local is 0.5. Miss rate 0.5. This is 0.5.
Yeah,
so this 0.5, this should be something wrong here.
I have that.
Is this 0.7? This is 0.5. So this becomes 0.8. It's more than 1.
How do we get the number? Is this a...
So how, what is the fraction of hits to the remote cache?
Mm-hmm.
Fraction of hits to the remote cache is 1 minus 0.7 minus 0....
Oh, sorry, because I was thinking of hit rates instead of miss rate. Miss rate is backwards.
Yeah, this whole thing should be hit rate.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So I was thinking of the rate.
Oh, actually, you just need this. That's the hits for the remote. Right? Total miss rate minus miss rate of local is the hit rate for the remote. No, that's not right.
Yeah, maybe it's that, I think, hit rate.
Oh,
of local is this, hit rate.
I think you're right.
Of remote is this. I was doing this minus this.
Remote. No, this is total. Oh, okay.
Minus. Yes. mist rate here is higher. This mist rate is higher. So this minus the point that we're getting is the
right.
Yeah.
It has to be mist rate
local.
Local, which is
0.5 minus mist rate.
Mist rate local is higher than the mist rate.
Yes.
No. Total mist rate is higher than the mist rate of local, right? This is funny. Okay. Wait a minute. Let's do this all over again.
The total is...
Total mist rate is MR. Okay?
Which should be something smaller than the local mist rate. The things that I was thinking of heat rates.
Yeah.
And this goes backwards.
Total mist rate is... You're right.
Let me just use heat rate instead of mist rate. And we can do it backwards, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
It should be the heat rate.
Heat rate of local. Local. Okay, so now the...
It's easy to go from heat to mist, right?
The question is...
Because I get extremely confused.
Yeah, so we have the latency of cache, we have the latency of remote cache, we have latency of disk, right? And the mist rate curve doesn't change. Mist rate curve doesn't change regardless of which cache you're using,
right?
Or if you're using portion of local we can use this equation to compute the latency curve, the new latency curve.
That has two latencies. The only thing is that we need to get this number, which change according on when you fill up the local cache. Unless we have the simplistic case where we know that it's at the end of the cache.
Right, so we have not one latency curve, but infinite number of latency curves. One for each choice of, not infinite, but, you know.
So pretty much we don't have latency curves. We can build a latency curve once we already have partitioned everything and assign everything.
Right, so what if we... What if we use a global cache and can think of that global cache as a unified cache that's local? I think of it as a local cache. And then do the partitioning. Get the partitions using this equation. Once we have the partitions, can we adapt the estimates after that point, once we have initial partitions, can we refine it somehow?
You mean for our evaluation or for the algorithm?
I'm just thinking a lot at this point.
Cause the algorithm used the MRCs, right?
Yeah. But the algorithm does not account for, changing latency.
Because it assumes that the latency of the cache is the same at any given point.
Yeah. This can be, we can give this some more thought. But let's go back. I don't think this is possible for the summation. Let's go back to what we can actually do for the summation. And what can we do?
Well, what's the big difference between simulating annealing and the previous approach?
The convex hull approach?
Mm-hmm.
The major difference was that the convex hull approach could not handle sizes of I/O requests that were larger than a cache line.
Yeah, I got that, but why people didn't use simulating annealing in the first place?
Because they were not thinking about external caches. They were only thinking about CPU caches where the access size is always smaller than a cache line.
I guess my question is there any downside of using simulated annealing instead of convex hull?
Because the simulated annealing is a probabilistic technique, whereas the convex hull approach will always get you the optimal solution. What can we do here? So let's say that we have MRCs, right? And if we assume that remote cache access latency is the same as local cache access latency.
And it's just to assume that we have a high-end cache and all the VMs are together in the same host.
Right. And then can we come up with an estimate for storage latency?
After we have partitions.
Yeah, after we have partitions. But let's say that we are going to do an approximation, that we are assuming that it's a global cache, and then the extra cache that is not able to fit in the local cache is allocated remotely in a fair manner or something like that. Then we can still, based on some property of the workloads.
Okay, right? I was thinking when you said that, the first approach that I can think is, okay, have all together in the same... Imagine that all together are in the same host. Imagine that it's a huge SSD, partition the SSD to each workload. And once we have the partitions, we go by each workload to see on which real hosts are and take all those partitions, try to put it on the SSD. If they fit together, there is no problem. If all together extend beyond the size, then proportionally to the partition size, we remove something in there and remove it to the host.
And then once we have that, then we can use the latency curve, right? Then we can apply this formula. I think that's probably good enough for the paper. So now the next question is, where do we get MRCs from? And which workloads do we use?
The good thing is that if that's what we're going to do, we don't need to run any experiments, so just math.
Well, unless we want to extract MRCs, unless we want to collect MRCs.
Which, I don't know how to do, but if we get the MRCs, then it should be fairly easy to get it together.
So that's something I think it's best to get in touch with Ricardo to do that. Is to ask him for some storage MRCs for certain whatever workloads he has. And if we can just use those MRCs, then we can do this analysis.
Well, we'll have to have the MRCs and the implementation that he has for the other paper.
For partitioning?
Yes, to really calculate the partitions in the global thing.
Yeah.
Or the simulator, just to have, okay, these are the MRCs, and this is the global, the size of the cache.
Yeah.
And let them calculate the partitions. Once we have the partitions, then we can do the rest of the math.
And in the meanwhile, you can probably get the latency numbers for the local versus remote.
Yes. That shouldn't just be access, do a write to SSD and do a write to a remote SCSI SSD.
Right.
I think Leonardo has done that, right?
And we need the storage latency as well. Yeah, Leonardo has done that. So I don't know if he measured individual latencies or not, but...
So what we need to write to a local SSD a remote SSC via iSCSI to say something, and to
the remote disk.
Remote disk.
Uh-huh. Read and write.
Okay, so there, depending on what operation we do, it might be better to write to the disk directly than the SSD.
Yeah. So this is something we need to probably think more careful about. How do we get latency estimates for local versus remote, the SSD versus disk?
Yeah, because we're not really comparing a remote SSD with a remote disk. We are comparing a remote SSD using our approach, using a caching infrastructure that is serving cache requests to a disk that is in a box that is serving a lot of nodes.
Yeah, so one way to think about this maybe writing to SSD on a different machine in the same rack versus writing to an SSD that's on the same switch versus something that's a few switches away.
Couldn't we just, for the partition paper, do you have the latencies? You do have the latencies for writing the local SSD in the cache and to write to the storage node.
Yes.
Can we just take those two numbers for the other two and calculate the other one just by having summing network transfer to a node?
Yeah, I think that's good enough.
We take the latency of the network transfer, we add it to the latency of accessing the SSD cache, and we have the three numbers.
Yeah. I just need, you just need to make sure that we have those other two numbers. I think we do.
Well, you did create latency curves.
Yes.
So to create it, you will have to need them, right?
Yeah, that's true. So now, I think a lot rides on your ability to get in touch with Ricardo, I think.
Yes. Many the MRC workloads, MRCs, and the whole partitioning algorithm.
Yeah.
The implementation of it to run it. And the two numbers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that would, if you can get that, then we can actually have evaluation, which is reasonable.
Okay, that is one sort of evaluation. Do you think of anything else to add, a different experiment or anything else? Because I remember that you said to put two different placeholders.
Well, that's certainly one experiment. And what else can we do? I don't know. I don't know. I think that would require a little bit more thought.
What key aspect that I think we haven't said anything yet in the paper we will discuss is how to enable a host to access another host's cache, the whole layer there. How it knows where it's here and where it's in the other place.
And the cache management layer, the cache replacement layer, the caching layer would need to know that, right?
Or some sort of protocol.
Yeah. So the caching layer has not just the partitioning logic, but also ability to handle remote requests. Right. So if some remote request comes for a partition that is owned by a remote host, then either the caching layer gets involved or doesn't get involved. But the remote host should be able to access contents from the cache.
that on one thing, and the other thing is, when you say caching layer, what are you referring to?
The hypervisor cache manager, SSD cache manager.
Okay.
So which is intercepting all IO requests that go to storage and redirect it to cache layer. Help, we say urgent, help needed with data. What do we need? MRCs for a few workloads. I guess a single MRC is sufficient per workload.
Well, if we already run the partitioning algorithm for the workloads, we don't really need MRCs.
Don't we need it to calculate the latency curve?
Yes.
So, and then that's one. Then the next thing is, what else do we need?
To run the partition algorithm too.
Code that runs the partitioning algorithm. Third is latency of cache and disk you used to construct latency curve from MRC. Okay, so I just sent out an email to Ricardo, and I'm hoping that he will respond. All right, so why don't you, what can you do? Maybe you can work on some part of the paper in the meanwhile. I don't know which part. Do you think you can work on? I'm planning to work on the introduction, so maybe something else.
Okay.
Maybe draw some more figures, I don't know.
I can do that. I can leave you the introduction and the motivation, which mm-hmm. I consider similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do the figures, and if something occurs in the other sections, I just put it there.
Okay. That sounds good. By the way, I mean...
what do you think about the section?
Which one?
How I did the sections in the paper and the layout.
Yeah, I think it's fine for now. We might have to modify it based on how, you know, the paper writing goes along. But for now, I think it's fine. Let's leave it as it is.
I thought that in the abstract you put some terms.
Yeah. I
can modify the paper so it is consistent.
Yeah, I think that would be great. What was the name of this? So I don't know that there should be MRC somewhere, I'm sure, here itself.
There is a file that says MRC.dat.
Where in the previous directory? That could be an MRC, but it's just one small file. But I think we need Ricardo's help to point us to where all of this stuff is. Okay. All right, great. I have barely enough time to eat something and then go to the bus.
Good luck.
All right.